Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you buying or selling a home or residential property? If you've never done it before, well, it's a daunting process. And even if you have, it can still be a daunting process. There are often a lot of steps involved and factors to consider. We have a licensed real estate professional in the studio today to answer your questions about the process of buying and selling a home. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Well, good to have you back, Alexander. Welcome back to Vox Pop.
Thanks for having me.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. You can go to our website, WAMC.org. There's a Vox Pop page, and you can comment on that, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. But again, I should say you can also email, if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. So, Alex, how has the market been? It seems, again, anecdotally, I see a lot of signs. I see a lot of for sale, a lot of pending. I see some sold in my neighborhood. Seems like it was a fairly active winter, and maybe more so than I remember.
Yeah, it was, Ray. It definitely was busier. I think a lot of that had to do with the warmer weather.
Yeah.
And people were more willing to get out and take a look at homes.
I mean, in a normal winter, and this was far from a normal winter, would that be the time to buy if you were a buyer?
Generally, yeah. If you're looking in December or January and the house is, if somebody puts their house on the market in December and January, usually they do so because they have to sell.
Right.
It's not the ideal time to list your home. Or alternatively, if the house is still on the market in December or January because it's been on the market for several months, the seller might have a little bit more flexibility or more motivation to sell.
Well, I know on past programs, you mentioned that this market, this Capital Region market, is fairly stable as far as inventory and sales, and it's almost sort of insulated from some of the vagaries of the market nationwide. How is the inventory at this moment?
The inventory now is actually low. There's a statistic out there that it's called the month supply of inventory, which is they take the current inventory of homes at the current rate that they're selling, and they come up with a number that determines how long it will take to exhaust that inventory. And generally speaking, a 6-month supply of inventory is considered to be a balanced market.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that in several years here. And as of last month, the current month supply of inventory is 6.4 months. That's down about 25% from last January.
Wow. So does that mean you'll get more when you sell your house?
Possibly. It means that it may be a little easier to sell if you list it for a realistic price.
Yeah.
Because there's just a lack of inventory.
Very interesting. And that could change on a dime, or will that be that way? Do you see that trend continuing for the year?
I don't think it's going to change it on a dime. I don't think anything happens too rapidly here. I think what we're going to see is sellers responding to the shrinking inventory, and it's also springtime, so this is a natural time for people to start putting their home on the market.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551. Alexander Monticello is here if you have a real estate question. 800-348-2551. I imagine that the continued lingering fears of rate hikes, which so far it's been a tiny little hike, may drive the buyers to make their moves.
Yeah, that can play into it. Certainly, overall confidence in the market and the economy can influence. But what we see a lot of times is, buyers at a certain point, they've been saving, thinking about this home purchase and planning for several months. And so a slight quarter point adjustment in the interest rate doesn't always move them one way or the other. Likewise, on the selling side, if you're relocating or you've outgrown your home, you don't always have the ability to kind of time the interest rate.
Oh, that's a good point. And it's certainly still a very reasonable rate for, especially for first-time buyers.
Yeah, it was actually interesting. I think when they raised the rate at the Fed, the mortgage rates actually went down.
And why?
A lot of the mortgage rates are also tied to the stock market and where money moves, on Wall Street. And so there was a decline in the stock market and confidence there, and so interest rates also fell.
Our guest today is Alexander Monticello. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Well, you moved. I hear you're an underwriter, and I hear you're underwriting, so I know that you moved your location.
Thank you, Ray. Yes.
So, well, that's exciting.
We are proud to underwrite WAMC.
Well, that's very good, and it's nice to have you here, although that's not the reason you're here. I want to be clear about that for our legal department. 800-348-2551 is the number. No pay to play here. So what's the biggest market now? What's the booming market in our region right now?
You know, I think what we're seeing is an interesting trend where people who are living maybe outside of the suburbs, in the suburbs, are looking to move back into the city centers. I've been doing some open houses in Center Square in Albany, and what I've been noticing is the traffic of the people coming through those homes are people who are living in Voorheesville, Bethlehem, Guilderland.
No. Excuse me, let me interrupt. Are they buying to live, or are they buying as a rental property?
They're buying to live, and everybody from, people in their mid-30s to older adults who are, their kids are now out of school and in college or out of college, and they're looking to downsize. And I think some of that has to do with they are looking for more walkable neighborhoods.
Yeah.
They're not as interested in driving, so they want to be closer to whether it's dining or the hospital, their doctors.
Yeah.
And they want the convenience of the location.
All right, let's go to the phones here, and let's go to Russ in Waterford. Russ.
Hello there. I have a basic question. I have a house that was built in 1973. It's a 2,700 square foot center hall colonial. It sits on 2 acres. And as it turns out, they're going to put in a small development near me, like 30 houses. And I've heard so many people say that when they build new houses, it makes your house worth more or brings up the value. Can you explain to me the theory behind that? Because I don't understand it. My house was still built in 1973. Now, granted, I've kept it up. I've made numerous improvements like new kitchen, new roof, new basement, the whole nine yards. But I don't know. Can you just give me some idea how that works?
Yeah, it's hard to say. The theory might be that if they're building more expensive homes nearby, it makes your home look even more reasonable and realistic. And if it's a desirable location, or perhaps that development of 30 new homes makes that location even more desirable, that can help with the value of your existing home.
It does, even though my house, houses will be brand new, and my house is quote unquote 40 years old right now.
Let me say it could. It's hard to say. I don't think it's going to dramatically change the value of your home in the next year or two. But it could be an improvement for sure, especially if it's developing an area that's, was vacant land, and it brings some more attention and attraction to the area. If nothing else, you'll have more people driving by your home, right? An extra 30 homeowners.
One other question, if I could. It sits on 2 acres, I actually think it's my house and my property may be worth more to the builder than if I put it on the market. Is it unheard of if at some point I get ready to sell my house to approach a builder about buying my house? Do people do that?
Yeah, you can certainly approach the builder.
It's contiguous to the development. It's coming right up. It won't be in my backyard because I have quite a buffer behind my house, but I mean, it could certainly be another roadway, or it could be two more houses for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to do that sooner rather than later, because I think once, a lot of these plans have to be approved by the town, and, once they get too far along, it may be harder for them to add on or make adjustments. The other thing you could consider is potentially, depending on how the acres are oriented, subdividing and selling off a piece of that property.
Because I live in Half Moon, and it seems like Half Moon has become a pretty popular place for people to build their houses. I know that much.
Yeah, there are certainly a lot of new developments there.
There are. Okay, thank you for your time.
Russ, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Alexander Monticello is our guest today of Monticello Real Estate in Albany, New York. How much is too much? when it comes to development. I see in certain towns outside of Albany just every available parcel being all of a sudden put into play for multi-residential units. And, you know, some could say it's too much.
Yeah, that's a tricky question.
You won't answer it, will
it's
you?
It's hard to say, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, Alexander Monticello dodging the questions here on Vox Pop. We'll take a break, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Pave Tile Wood and Stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone, showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998, windyhollowvet.com. Careers and Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Capital Roots, celebrating 40 years of providing fresh food and green spaces for the Capital Region. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for details.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Real Estate Today with Alexander Monticello, and back to the phones we go. And Sue in Poughkeepsie. Sue.
Yes, hi. I was just wondering what Alex thought about Zillow and HomeSnap and all these things online and sellers' expectations, you know, when they go online and see that.
Before you answer, Alex, Sue, what do you mean expectations? Price expectations or?
Yes, because they can vary. I know depending on what the, you know, things are selling for in the neighborhood, but they can vary quite a bit from day to day, week to week. And I was wondering if you ran into expectations of selling.
Very interesting question.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's no question that Zillow can warp expectations, and if you notice at the bottom of every page in Zillow when they provide their estimates, they also indicate that there's a margin of error, and I've seen that margin of error as high as 10%. So that's the reported margin of error. In some cases, it could be off more
than
that.
This is of the actual value of the home?
Yeah.
And what does it do? Compare it to what it's listed for?
Well, Zillow, keep in mind, Zillow is using an algorithm, and they're looking at similar homes, sized homes, that have sold in the last 12 months. And they're, you know, using calculations based on price per square foot, number of bedrooms, bathrooms, size of lot, and then using that sold data and trying to extrapolate to your home. But it's imperfect, right? It doesn't take into account the layout. It doesn't take into account updates you've done. It doesn't take into account the lot or the actual location or whether your house might be closer to a main road.
Right.
And so, you know, that's where the benefit of bringing in a real estate professional is they can give you more of a customized approach. But I think also Zillow is really helpful, and a lot of those websites do provide a lot of interesting information. But, you know, you've got to approach it with some caution. And I think if you're selling your home, you certainly want to make sure your home is featured on those websites because that's where 90% of the buyers are searching.
Nowadays, amazing. Sue, thanks a lot. I got to tell you, I think it's great. And there's another one. I know Zillow is one app that you can get, and there was another one that we used.
Sure, there's Trulia.
That's
there's
it.
There's Realtor.com. Yeah. I mean, those are the main portals. I think Trulia.
They're fantastic, though. If you're looking for a home in a neighborhood, they're right on the map.
Yeah, I think, you know, they probably 75-80% of the traffic online is through those national portals.
And so then it's up to the seller, if you're selling it for yourself or your realtor, to say, hey, wait, here's why that's not realistic. bam, here's the answer, and then you sell.
Yeah, and you know, buyers are pretty smart. They're not going to. Buyers understand the market, and they're going to look at homes if the pictures are nice and it's presented well. I don't think they're going to be too influenced by those estimates.
All right, back to the phones we go. Alexander Monticello is our guest. Amy in Castleton. Amy.
Hi. I was calling because my fiance and I are getting ready to put in an offer on a home. The listing price is $367,500, which my realtor feels is quite ambitious for, she sent us the comparable market analysis. She's suggesting we start in at an offer of $335,000, and I'm very hesitant to do that because I don't want to scare off the seller and I don't want them to be insulted because it is a gorgeous home, custom inside from floor to ceiling.
And now you have put your finger on the real dance that is involved with this, and it's your first time doing that. You may not enjoy the dance because you can get burnt doing exactly what you just mentioned. Alex.
Yeah, I think that's, I think you've got to trust your realtor. They certainly have a lot of experience, but price can be subjective. There's an objective market analysis that your realtor has provided, but that home may be more valuable to you than the general public for reasons you stated. So, it is a tough call. I think if ultimately you do want the house, you have a greater chance of success by making a higher offer.
Okay.
There are cases where a buyer may simply overpay, $5,000 or $8,000 for a house because they really love the house, they love the location, and they're going to be there for an extended period of time. If you're going to be in a home for, 15, 20 years or more, and it's the perfect home for you, maybe it is worth paying a little extra to guarantee that you get it. But that's ultimately a decision that you have to make. It's certainly a tough call.
It's not unheard of for somebody this has happened to where they put an offer in and it was low and they never heard from the owner again. It doesn't make a lot of sense for an owner to not at least do a counteroffer.
Well, I explain it this way. Essentially what this is high stakes poker,
yep.
Right? You don't know what cards the seller is holding. I've seen it go every which way. It's possible. I've seen cases where you make an offer that you think is really low and the seller accepts it. That's rare, but it happens. The bigger risk is not necessarily offending the seller. I think the bigger risk is if you make a low offer and it's too low off of list price, you've now opened yourself up to potentially get outbid from another buyer. And if the house is really attractive, as you mentioned, and it's got a lot of updates, and you really like it, and it's in a decent location, there's a chance that there's another buyer thinking the same thing. So
if I can just interrupt for 1 second, we got the impression that when they first listed the home, because the homeowners live, they work in New York City and they commute. They have a child who's going away to college, so they're looking to downsize. So from what their realtor told our realtors when they first listed it, because they were listing it in the New York Times and, various outlets like that, they had a lot of showings and then it kind of dropped off. So we went and saw it Friday and then Saturday we went back. The seller's realtor called my realtor last night to say those sellers have found another house that they would like to put an offer in on. So our realtor kind of took that as this is your chance. They really are motivated now because they've now found a house which they would like to put an offer on. Is there validity in that?
It's all psychology.
Are you saying is the realtor telling the truth or do you think there's?
No. I don't question that part of it. I'm just saying, is that often the case where when it's just listed and they haven't really been looking, or they haven't found anything, versus now this seller has found a home that they want to put an offer in without getting into that whole contingency of their house selling thing. Does that tend to motivate sellers more in terms of accepting an offer? Because the impression that I got is they had a lot of showings, and then it just kind of dropped off. And now it's like we were the most probably within the last couple of weeks, we were the most recent people to be ready to put an offer on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, the fact that they have found a house now that they want to move to gives them a lot of incentive to get their house under contract.
Interesting. And so how do you get that inside information? Is there an espionage service that realtors use?
There isn't one that we can talk about, but there is, you know, a realtor on the other side, and they're communicating professionally. So I think, you know, I think the only risk in making it, what I wanted to say was the only risk in making a low offer is if another offer is going to come in and potentially bump you. That's the one risk in making a potential lowball offer.
How long has the house been on the market?
About 2 months.
That's not that long.
No. And I mean, it's from the outside, from the exterior, it's just a standard. It was built, it's 26 years old. So it's just a standard colonial. But the inside, they did like an addition with floor to ceiling windows and cathedral ceilings and reclaimed barnwood floors. And there's like a built in bar. They did a ton of really great custom things, which to me, I mean, you know, we've seen about 12 homes. And this was the first one that we walked into that it was like, this could be home.
Huh.
They did like the sliding barn doors. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we walked in and we were immediately blown away.
Okay.
Not thinking at all that $367,500 was an unrealistic price, considering we had looked at homes that were just very cookie cutter builder homes that were within $20,000. So
okay.
I was kind of prepared to go in offering the $367,500 or, you know, close to that. And then when our realtor sent us the comparable market values, and she said, I think 335, 340 is more realistic for homes that have sold in this area, you know, and she was very open in saying, like, I don't want you to overpay for this house either.
Yeah, okay.
So it's that fine line of, I think your house is worth this much. Of course, I don't do this for a living, but I could comfortably see paying that much because it's justified.
I hope they're not listening.
Yeah. They know that we love the house. We absolutely love it.
All right. Well, Amy, good luck. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. So in your case, if you were representing Amy, you'd say, hey, make that offer at 335?
You know, I think what you need to do is you need to just, I think this realtor has done a great job. She's done the market analysis. She's advised the client, look, I think market value is closer to 335 or 340. And that's the role of the realtor. But ultimately, the buyer then has to decide, well, whether the house is worth more to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they like the house, you maybe take that realtor's low number and the owners and sort of
meet in the middle.
Throw an offer out in the middle.
Right.
All right, let's go to Nancy and Rhinebeck. Nancy.
I'll be right back.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes. Hi, my name is Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
My question is, what is the relationship of a professional appraisal to market value, generally speaking? Because I just had an appraisal done on my house, and I think it's like so much lower than the house was worth, and it's so frustrating.
Why was there appraisal done on your house?
I decided to take a loan. We had no mortgage, and I needed the cash flow, so I took the loan out.
So you can try to get, I mean, unfortunately, it makes a big difference because that's what the bank is saying it's worth, right? And they're the ones that are issuing the mortgage.
I accepted that, and from the point of view of getting a loan, that's not my problem. My problem is in the bigger picture. I'm wondering, how do I get a more realistic view of the price of the house if I think it's worth more? Get a realtor in there?
Yeah, exactly. What I would do is talk to a realtor, and they could provide a market analysis. You know, people make mistakes. It's possible that appraisal could be wrong.
And I guess my question is, are appraisals typically lower often than market value, depending on the market they're in?
Good question.
You know, I think it varies from appraiser to appraiser, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
You know, certain appraisers may have a leaning towards undervaluing property or might be more conservative in their estimates. It's a little harder it's a little easier to do an appraisal on a property when you have an arm's length transaction, right? Where you have a buyer and a seller who are putting together an offer and a contract. You can say, okay, that's a good indication of market value. But this appraiser doesn't have it. They're operating in a vacuum. You could ask the appraiser, you know, are they from the area? How many houses have they appraised in the neighborhood or nearby?
Okay. Got some wind there, Nancy. You want to listen on the radio while we talk about this?
No, I'll get back in my car. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I went ahead and just let that appraisal dictate the loan, but because I didn't need to get more money out of it. But I'm just concerned. You know, you want to know what your house is worth.
Yeah, I think the best way to do it is to call a realtor and ask for a market analysis.
Okay. Nancy, okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Tax assessment appraisals, not the same thing, right?
Correct. I mean, the best case scenario is you might have a lower tax assessment, you might on a house that's going to appraise or sell for more.
Mm, okay. Let's go to Tom in Latham. Tom, you're on with Alex Monticello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Alex, my question is more about how people are able to afford homes these days. We're, you know, lower middle income people, especially people who have had problems, in the past. It seems that there's a lot of government programs being advertised for first-time home buyers. But are there any programs out there specifically geared toward helping people that have had financial issues in the past, people that have had bankruptcies and foreclosures, especially after the financial meltdown of around 2008? There were a lot of people that went through, really hard times, and it seems that everybody just wants perfectly unblemished records as far as credit ratings. And it just seems that owning a home again is becoming more of an abstract concept more and more with each passing year. And I just wonder if there's anything, any hope out there for people with damaged financial records, histories.
This is good. Good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. There, so a couple things to consider. If you go to a local bank, they have a typical loan, conventional or FHA loan. They do have some limits as far as how low they can go and credit scores. I think the local banks in the Albany area, I've seen they can go as low as maybe 620 or 640 credit score.
Okay.
But if you're looking for more of a creative option, you could go to a local mortgage broker. A local mortgage broker is going to have access to a whole variety of national banks. And I've seen brokers do loans on credit scores under 600, I think maybe as low as 580. There are going to be some limitations. If you've had a bankruptcy or foreclosure in the last 3 years, I think there's a 3-year waiting period essentially.
My foreclosure and bankruptcy was stemmed from a divorce back in 2003.
Okay.
So
yeah,
everything came off the books over the last couple of years. But my credit, my credit is still something that the Hubble telescope is looking for.
Okay. Yeah, so the biggest factor is going to be, foreclosure or bankruptcy more than 3 years ago doesn't always become an issue. The bigger issue is going to be credit score and looking at, current payment history, and they're going to look at the last 24 to 36 months. There are credit repair agencies out there, and a good mortgage broker or even a good banker at a local bank usually has contacts with some credit repair specialists. And it can be worth
it. Are there any particular mortgage broker associations that would be good to call that would be, in terms of being able to give me some guidance toward which particular brokers would be appropriate to helping?
Yeah, we try to stay away from the advertising, but you can keep it general, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, or you can contact me offline, and I can give you a list of some of the professionals I work with.
And we'll give the email toward the end of the show, Tom. Thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. We talk real estate today, as we do every once in a while, with Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. And over to line 5 and Janie and Troy. Janie.
I think you look Janice.
Oh, Janice, I'm sorry.
Hey, that's right. Yeah, I had a question. I bought a house in January 2015, and I put a lot of money down, and I put a lot into the house, money on big capital improvements. It was a 5-year, it's a 30-year mortgage, but in 5 years it turns adjustable. So I'm getting some money from selling family property, and I don't know if it's a good idea with low interest rates to refinance for 15 or 30 years. Just put money to reduce principal and leave it as is, or put this money and get a home equity and pay off the mortgage.
Yeah, so you have a 5-year ARM right now?
Correct.
What's the interest rate?
It's 3.1%.
2.1?
3.1.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, probably now's a great time to refinance and lock in. I mean, you might be able to lock in a 15-year mortgage right around 3%. You know, the 30-year might be closer to 4. But my guess is in 5 years or in 4 years when your ARM comes up, I think the interest rates are probably going to be higher than what they are now.
Right, and it can eventually, in a few years, jump up to like 8.5%.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, the ARMs are great if you're going to be in the home for a short period of time. But, you know, I think the benefit of a fixed year, fixed rate.
The ARM is what?
An adjustable rate mortgage. So, you know, buyers will get a 5-year ARM, meaning it's consistent for 5 years. And then after 5 years, it jumps. Or a 10-year ARM would be flat for 10 years. And they give you these nice low interest rates in the beginning. But then after that adjustable rate period of 5 or 10 years, it then jumps up. It's pegged to perhaps the Federal Reserve rate.
Okay. All right. Well, Janice, we appreciate the call. We're going to take a break here. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Back with Alexander Monticello and the home stretch of today's Vox Pop in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony. Locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafood.com. Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. Kingsway Community, Schenectady, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including rehabilitation and more, caring in the family tradition. KingswayCommunity.com. Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. For 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit, clarepearson.net. And Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, and we are in the home stretch of our Vox Pop today with Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. By the way, how can people get in touch with you?
They can visit the website at MonticelloNYS.com or give me a call at 518-227-0718 or Google us.
All right, this came in via email from Donna in Albany. How about listing a home as a handyman special as opposed to doing necessary repairs? Good question. A lot of homes, thousands of repairs before you can make it sellable. At what point do you cut your losses?
Yeah, so this is a really good question. I mean, I generally advise clients, look, at your house needs to be maintained and good repair. You can't have anything broken or falling down. But this doesn't mean that you're going to tear out your kitchen and update your kitchen before you sell it, because you're probably not going to get that money back. So the most important thing you can do is, if you're getting ready to sell your home, is you want to give the impression to the buyer that your home is well cared for and well maintained. It's okay if it's dated. You can adjust the price accordingly. And that's the advice that I give. So,
okay. Yeah,
don't redo bathrooms and kitchens before you're going to list. There might be some small changes, like removing wallpaper or paint colors or, you know, buffing out the floor.
But changing. Be sure to prop up the wall that's falling down.
Make sure it's fixed.
Okay. Let's go to Jill in Colony. Jill.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was wondering about how you find an honest home inspector and what you can expect from them. And should you take the name and number suggested by the real estate agent, or do you find that they try to work with people that will just push through a home inspection?
Well, here's my suggestion. If you trust your real estate agent, then you should trust that they have good contacts for a home inspector. I guess if you don't trust your real estate agent, then that presents other problems.
Maybe get another real estate agent.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I think, the way I approach the situation, I mean, I do provide a list of at least three home inspectors to my clients, to my buyers. These are home inspectors that I've worked with many times before. I'm very interested. I mean, when I'm representing a buyer, that I'm aware that that buyer may eventually be selling that home in 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years. So I have an interest in making sure that they're not buying a lemon either, because my hope is that I'll eventually get that business down the road. So, and I think a lot of other realtors, who are in this for the long haul also think the same way. So they have an investment in making sure their clients, have a happy purchase. And the other thing is, we rely on our reputation and our referrals. So the last thing we want to do is, put you into a house that's a lemon and you move in and we get phone calls.
Is there a licensing process for home inspectors?
Absolutely. You can look the home inspectors up online. They should have a license. You can see if there have been any complaints filed against them. But I think if you have a good realtor and you trust your realtor, they should be able to provide you with a list of three names.
Jill, thank you so much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Over to Celia or Sela in Hudson. What is your name?
It is Celia, but it's spelled with an S, like in the Bible.
Okay. That's not how we see it spelled here, but that's fine. We have it right, and you're on.
Hi. So my question is about private mortgages or money mortgages. When you have one, and you're doing great with it, but because I bought in 2006, of course the interest rate was a lot higher than before the bubble popped. And even though it's creeping up now, how did you get a refi on a money mortgage?
What do you mean by a money mortgage?
A private mortgage where the owner holds the deed.
Oh, okay.
And is the bank, essentially.
Yeah. The terms of that mortgage will govern as to what you can do. But, you could go to a bank and essentially refinance, pay off the mortgage that the private lender has given
you. Is that like a rent-to-own situation?
No, it's
no.
Possible that...
the deed is in my name, in my name. So
yes.
So we went to close.
Right.
Close like a normal closing.
I see.
There was no bank. He was the bank.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, so, as long as there's no prepayment penalty, right, you could go to a bank and tell them you want to take a mortgage out on your house. They'll appraise it. They'll look at the existing mortgage. They'll pay off that mortgage, and then you'll have a different mortgage with the bank.
Do you know of any? Because all the ones that I've seen with my bank and with other banks, they always say in the little note, no money mortgage. So, I mean...
As long as that mortgage can be paid off and satisfied, I'm not sure why the bank would be concerned.
I don't know either, but when I talk to loan officers, they don't want to deal with a money mortgage.
That's weird.
It is weird, but I don't know what the rules are. Is it because it's private? Is it because people may not know exactly where financially you might stand in your ownership? If there's no coupon book or any paperwork, it's just I'm paying you every month and you're getting your check type of deal. I mean, if the taxes are paid up and you've been making your payments, but you just kind of want to get a lower rate, you want to take some money out to fix up some stuff, how do you, you know what I mean? Like,
well, from the bank's point of view, if they're trying to assess you as a buyer, they can look at your credit score, they can look at your payment history on your credit cards or your car loan or student loans. So you don't need to have a mortgage to get a mortgage.
Okay. So I'd say shop around.
You should, yeah. I mean, unless there's some unique term in that private mortgage that would prevent a payoff.
No, he's been great. It's just I just want a lower interest rate, and I just kind of want to build some actual credit because with a private mortgage, you're not building any credit. So that part of your life is like left, in the shadows.
Right.
Interesting. Well, that's an interesting call. Thank you so much. Let's go over to Rose in Albany. Rose.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to give a shout out to the Affordable Housing Partnership on Orange Street in Albany. My husband and I were, I had damaged credit from getting into trouble with my student loans. And so I was thinking of it when the caller called a few calls back, talking about, his credit history and how this idea of owning a home seems like a distant dream to so many people.
Yeah.
I took this amazing class at the Affordable Housing Partnership. It was like $25, and a year later, my credit was ready for, we were ready and we qualified for a mortgage, and now we are, I'm not going to say we're happy homeowners because we are working really hard to keep our home, to update it and maintain it. But it's possible. And so the Affordable Housing Partnership is an amazing agency that anybody who is looking for, for help with
That's a great call.
First-time home buying especially, give them a call.
Yeah, they also have a really good program for first-time home buyers where they provide a matching savings program. I don't know if you participated in that.
We didn't because of the limitations on it in terms of the timing. We weren't sure when we were going to be able to buy a house. So at the time, it was sort of like you had this window of time where you could cash in on that, and it didn't seem like it was going to fit for us. But that is a fantastic program. And we took our home buyer education class there, which was necessary for our FHA mortgage, which we ended up getting.
Nice.
But we really, it was so informative to learn about the way the credit scores are produced, and to learn all of the different tricks and the ways to manipulate what you're doing to really serve your credit score. I still use that information, to maintain.
Well, congratulations on your home, and I hope you're enjoying all the stress that comes with that home, because
we're loving it. We're renovating, we're fixing stuff.
Good for you.
And we're still married, so I think that's promising, right?
Well, I mean, at this time, it's working out well. Good for you.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rose. Appreciate it. Let's go to Bob in Claremont. Bob.
Yes. Thank you, Alexander. I'm calling about a question on holding a mortgage. I've been asked, I'm a seller, and I've been asked to hold a small mortgage on the total price of the home for 1 year. And I'm wondering what the ramification is that, what kind of problem I might get into, or what kind of legalities there are. I'm thinking without talking to my lawyer yet that I'd be the bank, apparently, and I'd be holding a small mortgage for 1 year, and then that would be the end of that. But what do you see any pitfalls with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, if they don't pay, right, you've got to bring the foreclosure action to recoup the money or file the lien against their property. Why would they ask you to hold a small mortgage?
I guess because they're short, and apparently they don't have enough to cover the total price of the home.
How much is the mortgage for?
Well, $50K.
Okay. That actually is kind of a unique situation where sometimes it can be hard to get a $50,000 mortgage. I think you certainly want to talk to your attorney, and or if you're using a realtor, talk to your realtor.
Right.
I mean, the other reality is they just get a mortgage for $100,000 and pay the rest in cash, and then they pay the bank off.
Yeah.
That would be the safer move, and that way you get your money at the closing. You don't have to worry about it.
Understand. This is like the second time that I've had a realtor approach me with this. So
yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, if that buyer is really serious, if they can't get a $50,000 mortgage, they should be able to get a $100,000 mortgage. And, if they can't get a $100,000 mortgage, then there might be some other things.
So
going
tread
on.
Carefully, Bob.
Yes. Tread carefully. I will do that. Okay. Thank you very much,
good
gentlemen.
Luck.
Thank you. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here. We're joined today by Alexander Monticello in the waning moments of our real estate program on Vox Pop. Let's go to Ruth in Schoharie. Ruth.
Hi. I have a question on picking a real estate agent. I lived in the Capital District all my life, and when I retired 4 years ago, I purchased a home in Schoharie, and I have a beautiful view from my home. However, there is a yearning still in my heart to move out of New York and maybe south. And when it comes time to do that, how do I know which agent to pick? Do I pick one that deals with more of the country or towards New York City people moving up, or more towards the Capital District area where there are a lot of jobs?
Well, Ruth, I think what you probably want to look for is a realtor who understands online marketing, because it's less about where the realtor is located and more about how they're going to market your home. Because 90% of buyers, whether they're in the Capital Region or New York City, they're searching online for those homes. So that would be my suggestion. Interview 3, 4, 5 different realtors and ask them what their marketing plan is to reach both New York City buyers and, Albany buyers.
Okay.
I don't know why you'd want to leave Schoharie. What a beautiful place to be.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. I have a beautiful view of the mountains. I got almost 4 acres of land. It's really nice. But most of my family doesn't live here anymore.
I hear you.
Ray may buy it.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't sound, 4 acres. I could probably put some tents up for the kids. It'll work out really well. Hey, Ruth, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. Gordon in Poughkeepsie. Gordon, you're up. Oh, let's hit the button, Ray, you dope. Hey, Gordon, are you there?
I'm here.
You're on.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, we're selling our parents' home. It's in Poughkeepsie. The realtor has it listed around 229. The question is, I've heard on your program, we're doing basic maintenance, but we're not, the question is it better to have somebody there to maintain it, or I have family members that don't want a person, one of the family members to live there. And I'm just wondering, is that, the realtor doesn't seem to have a problem with it, but it just seems to be a problem with some parts of the family. So I'm wondering what to do. Is it just best to just try to, keep it clear and just check on it? Or do you want to, make it appear that it's not abandoned, but it's just one of those issues that's kind of split the family in two halves?
Well, as a realtor, I always talk. We wear many hats, and family counselor is certainly one of them. I mean, I think I would say the argument would be the house is probably going to be better off if somebody is living there, maintaining it, keeping an eye out on the house, and that's going to benefit everybody in the long run, in terms of selling it. I think, it's probably better to have it lived in, assuming the person living there is going to take good care of it, is going to make it presentable and clean for showings when people come through.
Okay. I wish some of the family would adhere to that.
Have them give me a call.
I will do that.
All right,
thanks a lot for the call. Well, of course, you can listen online, too. You can send your family to WAMC.org and hear the archive of this portion of the program. Let's go to Bob in Ludlow. Bob, you're on.
Yes, sir. My father passed away in June, and he had his house free and clear, owned it, and he left it to me and my brother split down the middle. My brother didn't want it. I wanted to buy him out. He signed the deed over to me completely free and clear with the understanding that I'd pay him back to half the value going forward. And when I spoke with the bank about this, I tried to get a first-time homebuyers with my VA, and they wouldn't let me because I already owned the property. And then they said that I have to be in residence for 6 months before I could get an equity loan out. Is there any chance I can get an actual real mortgage rather than an equity line? Because it was like 6% was the number they quoted me, Bank of America.
I really recommend working with local banks. So,
the problem I have is the home is in South Carolina.
Okay. Maybe trying to contact a local bank in South Carolina.
Use a bank down there. I also heard that as long as I was on the deed for 6 months, I would be able to do that. That I didn't actually have to be in residence. Is that correct?
I'm not familiar with.
Varies
every
state
bank
to state, right?
Yeah, varies from state to state.
Well, I mean, Bob, why don't you guys just sell the house and give them half the money?
I like the house. I want to live there. That's where I plan on going my whole life. I plan on retiring down to there, and I still got to work some more. It was a little unexpected, but I don't want to lose it. They did a lot of work to it. It's a beautiful, beautiful house.
Well, he's your brother. Take care of him. You know what I mean? You can work it out.
I said, hook me up, bro. I gave you the car. Let me have the house.
Well, good luck, my friend. I appreciate it.
So contact a mortgage broker down there.
Yeah, I will try to reach out to somebody local down there. They'd be more familiar with it.
Thank you very much, sir.
Good luck.
Thanks, Bob, and good luck with the house. Well, I think we're about out of time here. Alex Monticello, how do people get a hold of you?
They can look us up online at MonticelloNYS.com. Give us a call at 518-227-0718.
So this is the time to, if you're one of those people who says, well, I'm going to finally put my house on the market, spring and early summer is the best time?
Yeah, I'd say now is the best time to list your house. I mean, given the statistics and the data, inventory is relatively low. We're coming into spring. It's getting warmer.
Have you had any chance to talk to your colleagues in the industry about guesses for when interest rates will go up?
No, I haven't. And, you know, I've been guessing all along and I've been wrong. So I generally have refrained from it.
No,
I think as the market continues to improve, I think rates will rise.
See,
but who knows what's going to happen?
I have a theory that there is so much debt that the government will never raise the rates again or else we will all go under, including the government. That's my theory. It's a conspiracy theory. Maybe it should be on late at night. That's another show. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org. And Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. Thanks again to Alexander Monticello for joining us today. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy, who was our engineer today. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, well, according to the script, it says Rich Guthrie will be here for birding. But how could we be so lucky? I don't know. We'll have to find out. I'll see you tomorrow.